Welcome to another installment of Historical Homicide. I'm your host, Christina Bentley, here to take you through a dark walk in the murderous paths of yesteryear. My question for you today is this: what drives you crazy? Is it something small, like hearing another person chew their food? Or is it more significant, like when someone is nice to you but mistreats the waiter? How do you feel in these situations? Do you speak up or push your feelings down? Maybe you'll deal with those emotions later. Or not at all. What do you hold on to, and what do you let go of? Do the sentiments you hold in decay you from the inside out, stewing and festering into something awful until you regurgitate them? Do they come out as insanity? It's 1888, and we're in the throes of the Second Industrial Revolution. People are making their way from rural farmlands into cities to find factory work. Those who are left to farm are finding it challenging to get by, while those who are in industry work are making a more lucrative life for themselves. Everyone from country kids to immigrants are clamoring to make their way to any metropolis, big or small, that will take them. It is in this world that we find Isaac Hall, a 17-year-old immigrant from Scotland, fresh off the boat. And it's not only Isaac who has arrived in America, but two of his brothers and three of his sisters as well. His youngest sister and brother are still in Scotland with their parents. Life in Scotland has been difficult. Isaac's parents have eight children to feed, and something has to give. That's when Isaac and his older siblings decide to embark on their own adventure. They board a boat to the United States and are ready to make new lives for themselves. And with an influx of new factory jobs, it shouldn't be too difficult to find work. Isaac can almost hear the voices of opportunity ringing in his ears. Isaac is our main focus in this story. All other characters are ancillary. Well, I should specify, most of the other characters outside his head are ancillary. It's Isaac and the voices in his mind that take the main stage today. Not all of the inward or outward conversations I detail took place. I've taken some creative license, but they're not far off from what most likely occurred. Before I continue, I do want to make one thing abundantly clear. Isaac is mentally ill, and as far as we know, completely untreated. Treatment at this time would involve inhumane asylums and a possible opium prescription. To my knowledge, neither of these things were ever implemented. After consulting with a practicing psychiatric physician, I have deduced that Isaac is likely schizophrenic. Although the term schizophrenia wasn't used until 1908, we can see shades of it in Isaac's behavior. Keep this in mind as we delve into today's story and see his psychotic breakdowns unfold. So back to Isaac and his siblings. They all settle around the Dunkirk and Fredonia areas. After working industry work for about 7 years, Isaac starts to miss home, mainly the countryside. He's tired of the daily soot and sweat of the city. The rolling hills of Scotland are calling to him. He can hear them calling, "Come home, Isaac." But he knows going home is not an option. The next best thing would be to own some land, but he doesn't have enough money saved up for that just yet. As Isaac ponders his options, a wonderful opportunity presents itself. There's a farm in Van Buren that's available to rent. As a side note, Van Buren is known as Van Buren Point today. It's located in Dunkirk, New York. All right, end note. It's close enough to his family that has settled in America, but he can have a little slice of heaven that's all his own. Excited to stretch out his legs, Isaac moves into the farmhouse in 1895. Let's pause momentarily. The shades of mental illness are so fair that they are hardly distinguishable this early in our story. The major shifts we should note are the big changes in Isaac's life, his move from America to Scotland, the change of country life to a more urban one, and now this shift from crowded industry work to a solitary farm life. These major shifts are likely triggers for his mental illness. Unpause. Ready to start this new chapter, Isaac devotes himself to farming. He finds joy in it, and as soon as he starts attending a church nearby, he finds a sense of community also. Isaac becomes known as a devoted and pious man, a godly man, always willing to lend a hand to his neighbor. Despite Isaac's glowing outward reputation, internally he starts to struggle. He's out in the fields all day and cannot keep up on food preparation and housework. He's still working toward earning a profit, but he isn't able to hire on a maid or a cook yet. And for unknown reasons, at 27 years old, Isaac remains unmarried. It's at this point that Isaac has an idea, one that will not only help him, but his sister as well. Anna, his youngest sister, is still living in Scotland. She's 24, 3 years younger than Isaac, also unmarried, and looking for new opportunities and life experiences. After receiving a letter from Isaac detailing his needs, Anna agrees to come help him. But just until he can afford to take on more help. She has goals to achieve and will only stay until affairs are well in hand. Delighted, Isaac sponsors Anna's one-way ticket to the United States. By all accounts, Anna is a beautiful, highly educated woman. For her to come and help her brother, well, it's certainly a labor of love. She loves her brother, but as soon as she can, she'll leave to continue her education. Once his household is well established, she'll be gone. So in 1898, Anna moves into the farmhouse. It's a lovely reunion for two siblings that haven't seen each other in over 10 years. Anna begins her work immediately. Food is cooked, laundry is washed, floors are swept, furniture is rearranged. She's making the old house a home. Isaac is still the same boy she grew up with, but there are some notable changes, namely his newfound appreciation for church and biblical texts. They had grown up in a religious family, but it seems as though Isaac has grown quite devoted in recent years. So much so that religion is almost always Isaac's main topic of conversation. Church sermons, congregation activities, Bible studies, his talks never steer too far from these things. At first, Anna appreciates his thirst for godly knowledge. How has her brother grown so wise? She's proud of him and how far he has come in life. His wisdom and farming skills have also captured the attention of the community. Isaac is becoming quite the prominent farmer, neighbor, and friend. He must truly be in God's favor. His lifestyle reflects his constant devotion. But as time goes on, Anna starts to notice that Isaac's so-called devotion is a bit extreme. He mutters to himself often, mainly about doing the will of God. One evening during Isaac's Bible study time, Anna hears Isaac having a conversation from the other room. Thinking he must be discussing biblical matters with a friend, Anna walks in the room to offer them some refreshment. Upon entering the room, Anna sees only Isaac seated at the table, his Bible open. When she asks him who he was talking to, he casually replies, "I'm receiving my directions from God. He's telling me his will, and I willingly obey." Anna has no wish to upset her brother in any way, but his constant religious preoccupation is a bit concerning to her. Maybe he is hearing the will of God. Maybe he is chosen in their community because he is pious. She doesn't have the answers. But Anna knows one thing. Isaac is prospering. His home and business are in order, and this seems like a good time for her to make her exit. She feels comforted by his personal and professional success. And if he really is chosen by God, then surely he isn't in need of her help. So in 1900, 2 years after Anna first arrived, the siblings have a bittersweet farewell, and Anna heads off to nursing school in Rochester. During her time in Rochester, Anna and Isaac write letters to each other. For many months, all is well at the farm in Van Buren. Or at least it seems that way. Anna is trying to read between the lines of the long, detailed, deeply religious notes she's been receiving from Isaac. Until one day. In Isaac's latest letter, he describes how he's been struggling again. If Anna could find time to come back and help him, he'd be truly grateful. As Anna contemplates her options, she knows that family is the most important thing to her. And in 1902, after being in nursing school for 2 years, she breaks from her studies and is determined to help her brother once more. Upon returning to the farmhouse, she sees that it is in disarray, not nearly as disheveled as the first time she came to help, but unkempt nonetheless. Anna settles back into her role as housekeeper and cook. It's nice to be back in the country, but she plans to stay only as long as she's needed. Anna cannot continue to put her dreams and aspirations on hold. With this mindset, another 2 years go by. Isaac is once again prospering, and Anna decides she's ready to make arrangements to leave. One evening, Anna sits Isaac down for a hearty home-cooked dinner after a long day of work. She tells him of her plans to return to Rochester to pursue a career in nursing. Isaac is quiet. Abnormally so. Anna tries to read his expressions, but his emotions are indistinguishable. After a long silence, Isaac finally replies, "My only wish is for your life to serve God." Taking this sentiment as a blessing, Anna happily hugs Isaac, and they continue their normal evening routine. Anna clears up dinner, and Isaac studies the Bible. As Anna prepares to retire for the evening, she notices that Isaac is ardently studying, passionately pacing and hovering over his Bible. She bids him goodnight, but it doesn't appear that he has even heard her voice. Hopefully he figures out the battlefield going on in his mind and rests. Anna goes upstairs to her room and relaxes into a restful sleep. Until. But first, a word from our sponsors. Would you kill for a beautiful face? The good news is, you don't have to. Visit the Aesthetic House on Fairmount Avenue in Jamestown. They offer a wide range of medical spa luxuries, from Botox to Diamond Glow facials, facial fillers, laser hair removal, and so much more. Visit the Aesthetic House and tell them Christina from Historical Homicide sent you. You'll be happy you did. Before we get back to Anna and what awoke her from her slumber, let's review Isaac's possible psychotic triggers. Number one, his move from Scotland to America. Two, the shift from rural life to industry work. Three, going from crowded city life to a solitary farm life. Four, Anna moving in with him and changing his routine. Five, Anna leaving to go back to nursing school. Six, Anna moving back in to help him. And seven, Anna wanting to leave again. Outwardly, Isaac has been pretty stoic. Any internal struggle, especially with the voices in his head, has gone largely unnoticed by almost everyone, except Anna. Back to our story. Until Anna is awakened in the early morning hours by Isaac's insistent calls for her. Thinking something urgent has occurred, Anna quickly puts on her robe, opens her door, and bang! Bang! Pain. Searing pain in her abdomen. That's all that Anna feels as she looks up to see Isaac. Emotionless, holding a shotgun. He confidently says, "God's will be done," and pulls out a knife from his pocket. Anna screams. Let's fast forward a few hours. It's January, a cold January morning. and a barefoot, disheveled Isaac stumbles to his closest neighbor's house and knocks on the door. It's early morning, and the neighbor answers to see Isaac. No coat, no shoes, covered in blood and looking confused. The following conversation ensues. Good morning, Isaac. My, it's early. Have you been butchering already? What can I do for you?
I killed her. Do you want to see?
Killed what?
I killed my sister, and I'd like to show you.
Had a little quarrel with your sister? I'm sure you'll work it out.
Come with me. I want to show you.
At first, the neighbor thinks this is all a joke. But as the conversation continues, he decides to follow Isaac back to the farmhouse to see what's going on. Isaac takes him out back to the woodshed and presents him with his handiwork. The neighbor yells, terrified, and immediately alerts the police. When the police arrive, they find the scene untouched and eerily quiet. Their discovery of this gruesome sight leads them to believe that this is what occurred in the early morning hours. Isaac calls Anna out of her bedroom and shoots her twice with a shotgun in the abdomen. Next, he takes a knife out of his pocket and stabs her repeatedly in the neck, blood spraying everywhere. Anna, still alive at this point, is dragged into the dining room, the room where she had served Isaac so many meals before. Isaac takes the carving knife and stabs Anna's body until she finally sputters her last breath. But the carnage does not end there. Let's follow a blood trail that leads from the dining room to the outdoors. Isaac pulls Anna's dead body into the woodshed, places her head on a woodblock, and beats it over and over again, eventually severing it from her body. He picks it up, he picks up what's left of Anna's head, and places it next to her body. Covered in his sister's blood, Isaac returns to the house to grab Anna's nightclothes. He piles them on her body and lays all weapons he's used in his sinister act on top of the pile. And off he goes to talk with a neighbor. When questioned by the police as to why he would do such a horrific, vile thing, Isaac has only one answer. Because God wanted me to do it. With the help of Allison Blake, a current inpatient psychiatric physician's assistant, I've come to the conclusion that Isaac was a schizophrenic with severe religious preoccupation and command hallucinations. People with schizophrenia are not inherently dangerous. It's a condition that today can be treated with antipsychotic medications and therapy. There are many takeaways from today's story, but one is this. Everyone is fighting a battle you know nothing about. Be kind, but be vigilant. Teach yourself to recognize mental illness symptoms in others and in yourself. Speaking about mental health issues no longer makes one a social pariah. Speak to your doctor, find a therapist, and take care of yourself, dear listener. A huge thank you to my friend, Allison Blake. Her help was invaluable in determining Isaac's mental state. I don't have any pictures to post on my Instagram account this time, but stay tuned for the next episode of Historical Homicide, airing May 31st.